Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention to peregrine falcons. Like so many birds of prey, peregrine falcons have slowly recovered from going nearly extinct decades ago. Here in Wisconsin, there's been a nearly 40-year effort, and it's still underway, to increase the number of nesting pairs of peregrines. And we're joined today by Greg Septon, founder of the Wisconsin Peregrine Falcon Recovery Project. It was launched in 1987. He's banded more than 1,300 wild-produced peregrines throughout our state. And as we talk with Greg, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about the nesting and maybe the hunting habits of peregrine falcons? Have you seen a peregrine in the wild? You can join the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. Greg Septon, welcome, and thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
For nearly 40 years, you have directed a successful urban peregrine falcon recovery effort in Wisconsin. How did you get interested in this, and what continues to fascinate you about this very particular bird of prey?
Well, when I was a young kid in high school, I used to daydream about bringing peregrines back. They'd been gone for quite a while, and I had, you know, pipe dreams about putting a dome over the quarry in Racine and trying to get captive produced peregrines to nest on the cliffs in the quarry. And one thing led to another. And again, it was a good part of my life. There were no peregrines. And when I was at the Milwaukee Public Museum, I was able to eventually gather up some folks who had some interest and some money and initiate a recovery program with the releases of captive produced young. But going back to your original questions, I've always been intrigued by peregrines my whole life. So it was just kind of a natural extension of that interest and wanting to see them back because I wasn't able to see them as a kid. And today I can take my daughter out and show her peregrines at pretty much any time I need to.
Yeah, that is very cool. So what's so fascinating? Talk about this bird.
They're the fastest animal on the planet. In a dive or a stoop, they can exceed 240 miles an hour. It's like watching a feathered bullet. They're extremely good parents. They've always been somewhat rare. They've been limited basically to available habitat, suitable habitat, I should say. And those were historically the cliffs overlooking the Mississippi River, the Wisconsin River, the Door Peninsula, and so on. So even historically, they were always rare. We probably had, you know, a couple dozen, maybe 30 pairs nesting in the state prior to their extirpation with DDT. So they've always been rare. They've been something special to see. A good friend of mine who helped head up peregrine recovery in Minnesota, Dr. Bud Tordoff, who was also a World War II flying ace, would always say, any day you see a peregrine is a good day. And that line has always stuck with me, and it's true. You're out all day, and if you're working and trying to find birds, you see a peregrine, it saves the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and at the time that you started this recovery project with 1987, what was the state of the population in the state?
We hadn't had peregrines nesting in the state for over 20 years, and I'd come up with an idea to try to get peregrines established along the western shore of Lake Michigan. The western shore of Lake Michigan is a major migratory path for a number of different species, but raptors in particular. And I thought if we could get peregrines nesting on human-built structures, tall human-built structures along that migratory route, we could do something to prime the pump and get a production facility, so to speak, going to pump out peregrines on an annual basis, to keep those sites active, obviously, but also to expand out and reoccupy some of the historical sites, the cliffs along the rivers, and so on.
And what is the known population of peregrines in Wisconsin today?
I can give you the numbers. I'm still working right now in this year's report trying to get some final numbers. But I'll give you the numbers for last year. Last year, we had 43 successful nests that produced a total of 125 young, which is probably one of our best years.
That is wonderful news. And banding, you have personally banded more than 1,300 peregrines. How do you do that?
It's actually a close. It's approaching 1,500 this year. So I got next year I'll surpass 1,500, hopefully. I just get out. I monitor the sites and find out when their eggs are laid. I determine when they're going to hatch so I can come back. Banding is critical. You want to make sure the birds are between about 18 to 22 or 23 days of age. Any younger than that, they are sometimes difficult to sex. Any later than that, and they begin to get mobile, and you could inadvertently frighten them out of the nest box. So trying to determine that critical five-day window or six-day window is probably the most difficult part, and then it's just putting on a lot of miles and climbing.
You got to be putting out a heck of a lot of miles, especially you got to be burning up the roads there, because I assume that the nesting and so forth happens at a roughly the same time for all the pairs.
Yeah, there's about a 3 or 4 week period where I don't get a lot of sleep, and there are days I drive 500 to 600 miles and band at 2 or 3 sites. So there's a crunch period, but it starts off slow and it peaks and then kind of tapers off a bit. So I've been doing it a long time. I actually look forward to it every spring, and I had a little setback this year. I got a new knee this summer because that was holding me back. So hopefully next year I'll be back on track and banding as many or more than ever, hopefully.
Ann in Jefferson has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ann.
Oh, hello there. I've just got a remark, something my mother told me many years ago. I'm from Maryland, and she was from upstate New York. But anyhow, we were standing out in the yard, and she saw a bird fly over, and she said, look, it's a peregrine falcon. And she pronounced it like that. So we're little kids look up there saying, how can she see two green birds all the way up there? And we did not laugh because she'd have walked this one. But because she mispronounced it. It was years before I realized it was peregrine. But I've been fascinated ever since then.
What a great story. Comment, Greg?
Well, it was a good day, wasn't it?
A pair of green falcons and wondering how they get two out there. That's a great story, Ann. Thank you for sharing that with us. That's really cool. You got something to share or a question? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to talk@wpr.org. The banding process, you sort of mentioned it in passing, but it's got to be difficult a bit because you got to climb up there or get up there somehow. And then the birds themselves, you certainly don't want to be injuring them in any way.
No, you want to be careful, obviously. And there's two things. Human safety is incredibly important as well. So these adults are capable of giving you some problems. I've been hit a few times, but the few times I have been hit have, for the most part, been my own fault for not paying attention. But they can hit you. They can hurt you. They can draw blood. So you want to be careful. You don't want to get hurt yourself. And obviously, you don't want to hurt the young. So I very carefully gather them up out of the nest boxes, put them into a small air kennel or carrier. And I generally bring them indoors where it's safer to do the banding. I have done a number of sites out on the rooftops and things where there are adults, but I try to keep them settled down as much as possible and band away from the nest box whenever possible.
And the cliff edges, do you actually collect on cliff edges? I can see you doing it on the top of a building because you can get up there, but cliff edge.
I personally don't band that many cliffs. I've only banded a few of them. A number of the cliffs in Wisconsin are banded by folks from the Raptor Resource Project. But they'll rappel off the side of the cliff, and then they'll bring the young up again in a small carrier. And the banding is generally done on the top of the cliff. And then once they're completed, the young are lowered back down to the eyrie and placed back on the ledge.
Very, very, very cool. Cindy in Amherst emailed a photo they took of a peregrine perched on a gas station in Marquette, Michigan, this past February. It's a beautiful shot, and right on top of the gas station sign. How is the distribution around the nation in terms of peregrines?
They're fairly widespread. We have a very good population here in the upper Midwest. There's, of course, the Rocky Mountain population and the Pacific Coast population. The East Coast, we've got a lot of peregrines. You don't see them in the Deep South as much as you do here in this part of the country, but they're pretty widespread. You're not going to see them on the Great Plains, generally speaking. You know, again, you're going to find them where there's available habitat, and that includes natural cliffs, but it also includes human-built cliffs, so to speak, the buildings we've built, the bridges, the grain elevator complexes, tall smokestacks associated with industry and power plants, et cetera. So there are a lot of human-built cliffs, per se, that are available today as nest sites, and peregrines have adapted to these and use them on a regular basis now.
Yeah, we have at least a pair, do we not, in our capital city?
Right, you have a pair that nests at the MG&E, the Madison Gas and Electric Power Plant.
Yeah, which is pretty cool, and it's great to see. I've seen them, especially like on a Saturday morning at the farmers market downtown.
Right.
You might see them there. Greg Sefton, our guest today, talking about his work with peregrine falcons. And if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in or an experience to share. I'd love to hear from you. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at peregrine falcons today with Greg Sefton, a perfect person to be talking to because he's a falconer and founder of the Wisconsin Peregrine Falcon Recovery Project. He launched it back in 1987. Former director of the Natural History Outreach Section of the Milwaukee Public Museum. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or shoot an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's go to Mike in Madison next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question about how many birds are banded in the city here in Madison, because I have three that I see in my backyard all the time, and I don't think, well, I know I saw three juveniles, two males and a female, in the same time in a tree, so I know there's three in my backyard in Madison on the northeast side, and I'm just wondering, I don't think they're flying in. Then this year there was another three juveniles, same thing, two males and a female, and there's been two adults hanging out. And so there's a lot of falcons I see just in my backyard. So how many do we have actually banded here in Madison? And what do you think our estimate is in this area?
First of all, there are these raptors you're seeing in your backyard. Are they coming towards bird feeders at all? Are they feeding on chipmunks or other animals in the backyard?
Oh, yes. They have decimated the bird feeders this year. I usually go through a gallon to 2 gallons a week of feed, and I'm down to a gallon every other week now.
The reason I ask that is it's very likely the birds you're seeing are Cooper's hawks, which have become incredibly urbanized, and that one of their habits is visiting bird feeders and going from yard to yard and getting breakfast, lunch, and dinner in that manner. They're very adept at it. They become very common. A number of these birds have been banded, but they're not banded to the extent that peregrines are these days.
So what is how does a peregrine get its food?
Peregrines hunt the open skies. They take their prey, generally speaking, in the air. Again, they're in these classic high-speed stoops or dives. They're very efficient, and again, the birds are taken out of midair.
Oh, so that's how they usually get there. Most often, 90% of the time, at least, I would guess.
The 90% or more. There's one instance that it always makes me laugh about up at the Edgewater Generating Station, where there was a pair of pigeons that had nested in a small recessed area at the top of an I-beam near the roof of the plant. And the male peregrine, of course, that was nesting there that particular year was very opportunistic. He discovered he could walk down that I-beam, walk into the opening, and grab baby pigeons out of the nest and bring them back and feed as young. So, again, they can be opportunistic like any animal, but generally speaking, they take their prey in stoops.
Oh, really interesting. David in Zion, Illinois, will go to you. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I had a cousin in the country here in northern Illinois who had a peregrine falcon, and the highlight of our visit was always to watch him interact with this bird. It was really amazing. And for those who've not been up close to one of these magnificent animals that God created, I really feel sorry for them because they're really being cheated, because it's really a wonderful animal.
What was your cousin's name?
Let's see. His name was Steve Ball.
Okay, I don't recognize. I know a number of falconers. I know people who work with peregrines. That's why I was curious. But no, I don't recognize that name.
Interesting, though, and they are beautiful animals. The Wisconsin Falcon Watch 2023 Peregrine Report, I just love going through that you put together, of course, Greg, and the photos of the peregrine are stunning photos, lots of them.
It's a labor of love. It generally takes about 4 or 5 months to put the report together, but I like doing it. As long as I can continue to do so, I will.
Yeah, they're just stunning photos and a lot of really interesting information. Bill in Sheboygan, I believe, is up next. Bill, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, we do a lot of motorcycle riding and enjoy watching the birds. But the question I have is the difference between a male and female peregrine falcon. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. How do you tell the male from the female?
Yeah, the difference is basically size. The males are about a third smaller than the females. Oftentimes, they have a paler coloration. The back is more of a, generally speaking, is more of a powdery blue, whereas the adult females' backs are more of a grayish blue. They vary, and you get crossover between the two as far as markings go. But generally speaking, I'll go by size. And you know, if you see the same birds up back and forth, you can start to make comparisons, and it gets to be pretty easy to identify, you know, males from females and from the markings generally.
Yeah. Philippa in Madison, it's your turn now. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I've been following Trudy and Melvin for many, many years at the MG&E Nest Box in downtown Madison. And I've seen many of their chicks get banded, and then they fly away, and that's the last you see of them. And I wonder, because there have been a lot I've been quite fond of, and whether they've ever turned up healthy and happy somewhere else.
Yeah.
We have a lot of the young that banded that do turn up and nest elsewhere. Some of the birds from Madison have nested elsewhere here in Wisconsin. Some have nested in other states. Peregrines have a first-year mortality rate of 50 to 70%. So if they get beyond that first year, they do fairly well. I've had peregrines that I've banded. In fact, we had one here banded last year, I think it was, year before last year, that ended up down in Nicaragua. I've had another peregrine that ended up in Venezuela. So we find out a lot about how far they travel. There's also peregrines I've banded as babies in nest boxes that have survived to live to be 13 and 14 years of age, and I banded all their babies. So you can tell a lot about a bird. You can find out how long they live, what their lifetime production is, dispersal, where their young go, how long their young live, so on and so forth. So banding is important. I want to continue doing it as long as I'm able. We continue to learn more and more every year.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in Madison wonders how much competition is there among peregrines, red-tailed hawks, and Cooper's hawks. How much pressure do they place on each other for habitat and food?
They all have different habitat requirements, and they all nest in different situations. You'll see red tails nesting in deciduous forests and their woodlots along farm fields. You'll also see them nesting on structures in the city. Cooper's hawks, you'll see nesting in woodlots, parks in the cities, and so on and so forth. Peregrines, generally speaking, nest up high. They're going to be up high on a building, on a human-built structure, up on a cliff. So there's not really a lot of competition between the three species. And when they do interact, the peregrines generally end up ending up on the top of the heap, so to speak, because in the air, there's really not much that can compete with a falcon.
I wouldn't think so. Well, you're a falconer yourself. Do you have your own peregrine that you work with, or how does that work?
No, I'm not a falconer now. I grew up flying goshawks and redtails and prairie falcons, but I don't have birds now. I much more enjoy being with peregrines, working with peregrines every year, banding young. I get my falcon fixed that way, so to speak.
Okay. Austin in Ironwood, Michigan emailed to say they work in Ashland, Wisconsin, and several years ago, peregrines began nesting on the large ore dock reaching into Lake Superior. Because the dock was due to be demolished and the fact that the terns there were being eaten by the peregrine, efforts were put forth to keep the falcons from nesting on the dock. Eventually, the falcons moved on and the dock was taken down.
Right. Those peregrines, if I recall correctly, moved to the power plant. There's also a power plant in Ashland, the XL of Energy Bayfront plant, and they've been nesting there since.
It's
an interesting point, because one of the things that in the urban population that you have to deal with is that a lot of these sites don't last forever. Buildings come and go. Buildings are torn down. Power plants, as you may well be aware, are going by the wayside. Coal-fired power plants are going by the wayside. So what I've spent a lot of time doing is looking for replacement sites. When a power plant goes down, I try to find something nearby that is suitable and then work with those property owners or building owners to get a nest box built in that structure in effort to draw the peregrines from the old site to the new site. Now, I've been fairly successful. We have a new site down in Pleasant Prairie that replaced the Pleasant Prairie power plant. We have a new site in Sheboygan at the Bort Malt site that it's set up and operating now. So when the Edgewater Generating Station does come down, we've got a backup site. So trying to keep this population stable requires making sure that we have quote-unquote replacement sites to those sites that we lose.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, as I read your report, it was intriguing to me to see your listing of sites and so forth, and you had there'd be nest fail site or temporary site. And I wondered about those designations, actually.
Well, if the site fails, it means there were eggs were laid that didn't hatch.
Okay.
And as far as the temporarily occupied sites, these peregrines in the springtime do a lot of moving around. They'll go from site to site, and oftentimes you'll end up with territorial battles where a visiting falcon will come in and battle with the resident falcon and either get chased off or take over that site. So in the springtime, when hormone levels are high, they move around until they can find a place to nest, establish a territory. And once they've established a territory, as long as they survive, they'll come back year after year. But again, in the springtime, there's a lot of movement between sites. The urge to nest is quite strong, and these peregrines move around quite a lot.
Tom in Oshkosh, your turn now. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, thanks. Wonderful show. For a long time, we lived on Lake Mendota, and one morning we got a phone call from our neighbor saying, look slowly out your window. You'll see a pair of peregrine falcons. And they were there pretty much for weeks to months. I don't remember how long. I just remember they were there, and there was a cliff going down to the lake of about 35 feet. But they were about less than 20 feet from our bedroom window. And I was trying to I don't recall how long that nesting period was. And the other one was the acute lack of songbirds that summer.
You said there was an actual cliff, 30-foot cliff or ledge by the river, by the lake.
Yeah.
Do you have any images?
Yeah.
Did you take any photos of those birds?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Did you take any photos of those birds?
We did, but they're on a phone from long ago. It would take me a while to retrieve it.
If there's a ledge there along the lake, I would love to see those birds, see pictures and find them, make sure they're peregrines.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. Tom, thank you so much for calling. And Greg, the time has flown by. I want to thank you so much for all of the work that you've done on with peregrine falcons. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And by the way, I had Bill Volkert on the show yesterday, and he wanted to be sure to say hi to you. Greg?
Bill's a good guy. Hi, Bill.
Greg, thank you so much. Greg Septon, falconer, founder of the Wisconsin Peregrine Recovery Program. Great to have him with us. Thank you so much for listening in. And a big thanks to our whole team, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, and, of course, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in, and stay with us. Lots in store on WPR News.